Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me, as almost always, I guess, the captain trips to my major disaster, it's Dan. Hey Dan, how you doing? Are you in survival mode?
I'm in survival mode, and it's not particularly fun, but podcasting tends to be fun, even, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling like, yeah. I hate to say that we have to be on our game, because we won't be. But it might behoove us to be on our game, because so many people across the country, if not the world, and we actually have a few people who listen in other countries, believe it or not, pretty much are trapped at home with not much to do and beyond, you know, binging Netflix and whatnot. So people have no excuse to ignore us now. They'll have to listen to us to, like, pass at least an hour or two of their day. So we got to do it to entertain them. And hopefully, to keep us on track, we are going to be joined tonight, a different threesome. And no, we're not talking about quarantine sex, you filthy-minded people out there. We're just welcoming aboard not the barrister known as Brian. We've got the Missouri Mrs. herself. It's Jamie. How you doing, Jamie?
Hello. Just reliving my days of house arrest.
Oh, I kind of hope that's true.
What did you steal some maple syrup back when you were a teenager and get arrested or something?
Yeah, no, I grew up with a dad that was a cop who was always house arrest where I lived.
See, our podcast has already improved just like that. So, yeah, it's going to be a weird phenomenon. We're all experiencing it in different ways, depending where you live. But we are mostly all experiencing it to some extent. The age of Corona, or whatever we want to call it. I mean, I know it's actually COVID-19, but Corona is much more fun to say. So let me see if I got this straight. So Dan, I know that you're still. You're like that border between Wisconsin and Minnesota, but you're actually in Wisconsin, correct?
Yep, I'm about an hour from Minnesota.
Right. So where you are is, I mean, I always got the impression that it was borderline. I can never pronounce that word. I'm going to screw it up. Wow. Rural, where you are, or am I?
Yeah, rural.
Yeah, it's one of those rural words. I'm just, you know, I sound like
it's hard.
I sound like Scooby-Doo when I try to say the fucking word. And Jamie, are you outside of like St. Louis or something?
No, I am very southwest Missouri. I'm like 10 minutes from Kansas, 15 minutes from Oklahoma, and about a half hour from Arkansas. Four state area.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, basically, pretty much.
How did you end up there? No, I'm just kidding. Have you always been there, or did you relocate there?
No, I'm actually originally from about 2 hours away from where Dan's from, but on the Minnesota side, which is why you occasionally get those long O's coming out of my voice.
Oh, is that why? I thought, well, never mind. Can't make jokes like that in the Me Too
job. That ain't a Missouri thing.
Not too many long O's coming out of Missouri, I guess.
not with the Pickens around here. No, no.
No, not unless there's an N in front of it. No. And as I'm sure most know already, I'm in the New York. So as I understand, we all got our different forms of state ordinances and laws and lockdowns and whatever's going on. And I'm sure the supermarkets and stores there's a run on this, that, and the other thing in your neck of the woods as well, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Oh. Very much.
Yeah. I'm just glad I didn't have to, like, you know, I don't have to go shopping because I did all of it before, but I realized there was a problem, so I don't have to deal with any of that nonsense. However, it's still crazy.
Well, my intention was, what night was it? Saturday night? Yeah, because I didn't have plans. I went out Saturday night to do some grocery shopping, not because of the whole, oh no, the sky is falling situation, just because I was due to do some grocery shopping. And I had heard about this kind of stuff going on, but it was like, is it happening around me? I did notice certain parts of the supermarket were a bit depleted. The potatoes and onions were almost gone in the produce section, but as someone else pointed out to me, that might not have necessarily been about the viral outbreak as much as St. Patty's Day is coming. I was like, right. Oh yeah, potatoes, onion, yeah, I guess, okay, gotcha. But I did notice a few other parts of the store where things were like, oh, there's a lot less soup than normal, or wow, the pasta's gone, you know, our tuna is gone. Such a thing, seeing what would be taken. And I heard the jokes about this, and I didn't buy toilet paper that night because I remembered I had at least 3.5 rolls or something, so it wasn't on my mind as an emergency item that I needed to get. And they had a couple things left, practically none, but they actually had a couple packages of what I normally would buy. I don't know why I didn't buy them. Because when I went back a couple days later, going, oh my gosh, I think I do need this, there is no toilet paper there. And I went to a couple other stores, gone, 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 gone. I was like, oh, this could get bad, or I could be using the bathtub as a bidet pretty soon or something, I don't know. But I did discover, like, in a bodega, just not my preferred brand by any stretch of the imagination, but I figured, okay, I got a couple rolls, let me get a couple more. I'm sure within a few days, you know, stores will replenish unless things really go haywire. In which case, I've got much worse problems to worry about. But it's been crazy. It's been really kind of crazy.
Yep. No toilet paper.
Yes. But I got lots of paper.
But hey, you know, when it comes down to it, spray bottles are a buck. I'm just saying. Worst case scenario.
Oh, like I said, the bathtub is right next to the toilet, man. Just, you know, splish, you know, whore bath after every crap, that's all.
There you go.
Anyway, what a lovely topic that I'm sure everybody was tuning in to hear about. Like, they're like, hopefully you don't know what I look like, because you don't really want to be imagining that vision right now.
Yeah, it's like the Chicago sunroof, but like a porta potty version.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just like practicing. and imagine the looks on the children's faces. Especially if my aim is good. Anyway, we are here to not talk about such fecal matters, although now they probably will come up again pretty soon, you know, depending on what we ate. We are actually here to talk about the last 2 weeks worth of Better Call Saul. I don't know if it's going to be a running thing this season where we keep skipping a week or two and then do like these multiple episode podcasts. It is what it is. It's all about timing and people's health and whatever. But we are here to talk about two of them. So, you know what? Let's get to it. We're enabling everybody's social distancing this week by talking about Better Call Saul. So we're going to have to lead off with last week's episode. That episode was Namaste. That was the fourth episode of the fifth season. It was written and directed by Gordon Smith. This was Gordon Smith's very first directing gig. Well done. As a writer, he's worked on several Better Call Saul episodes. I've mentioned him a number of times, so listeners might recall he's best known for season one's 5-0 episode. You know, the Mike, I broke my boy episode. Right off the bat, I gotta say, I'm going to throw it to one of you guys. One of the things I really enjoyed about this episode took me right back to the era of Breaking Bad. I love, and they've done it in Better Call Saul a number of times, I love when you have a mystery opening. When you get that scene when there's not really any context or explanation, and you gotta try to figure it out, piece it together, what it means, what's going on, and you might not pick up on it until well into the episode, maybe even towards the end of the episode. And if you guys might remember, this was the one that began with Jimmy in that thrift store. Clearly, he's looking for something heavy. And that was the entire opening, and we had no idea what it meant. And we don't find out until a good 35, I think maybe even 40 minutes into the episode or something like that. So that was a fun start. Did either of you have any idea what he was up to, or what was your take on that?
Dan, do you have a take on that?
At the beginning of the episode, I just figured like it was like, you know, some Saul lawyer like thing. He was going to do some kind of scheme for that. I didn't think it was going to be like a personal matter type thing. But it was pretty stressful watching him like swing items around this like super cramped shop. I like really thought he was going to like drop a TV or something.
as soon as he picked up the bowling ball, I was like, he's going to smash some shit. That's all I knew. I knew something was getting broke. I don't know why, but when I see a bowling ball, I mean, if you're not going to a bowling alley and holding one, what else are you going to do with a bowling ball? Break shit?
Yeah, and basically, by the way, he was, you know, hoisting everything else up. It definitely looked like he was looking for something to smash with. And then coincidentally, we do begin the episode. And don't worry, this doesn't mean we're going to recap the whole episode. It just happens to be the first two things we saw. Because I think I want to segue right into talking about Kim. I think we're going to be talking about Kim a lot in both of these two episodes. I think there's a lot. There may be more to talk about with her than possibly any of the other characters, if you think about it. A lot of it's going to be in the second episode, but let's start with this one. The whole thing about her sweeping up the glass. Now, putting aside the fact, a little bit on the nose as far as, you know, she's taking care of her own mess, but I don't mind it because I felt it really says something about her character, and it kind of foreshadowed pretty much that entire episode going and well into the next episode as well. So I'd like to talk about Kim more specifically with this episode. However, if you feel you want to just go into the next episode as well, anyone listening has watched both episodes, that's fine. I'm not going to scold you for it. I just think Kim's character arc right now, to me, is the most interesting and complicated of our main characters, as far as I'm concerned. You guys might feel differently. And I love that they're giving Rhea Seahorn so many things to do and that are just, you know, giving us even more shadings to her character. So I realize I should be directing traffic a little bit since we have more than one person on this podcast. So, Jamie, I'm going to throw it to you and not because of your gender, just because you haven't been here in a while. So,
I haven't. It's true. Okay, I just want to make note really quick because I know we're going to try to move this as long, you know, as fast as we can. But I just want to make note that we got to see some Oderkirk butt, which is exactly what you would think an Oderkirk butt looked like. So there's that. I also liked with the glass in the parking lot that, like you were saying, kind of on the nose, but Kim looked at it concerned and he, and Jimmy's like, no, that's what you pay management for. Like they'll take care of it. Which is really how he kind of operates. Like make a mess. Someone else has got to clean it up, and we just move on.
Did you, with him doing that, did it remind you at all of the thing that happened with his ice cream cone in the previous episodes, which I totally forgot to mention in our podcast with Brian? The thing with how he returns to where he dropped the ice cone, he just kind of stares at it. It's like, a mess that he made, and then he just walks away from it, as opposed to what Kim does here? Okay.
And he looks all disgusted at it. Yeah, but I'm really bummed out you didn't say anything about that because I thought that was very much in line of how these writers work, that the ants and the ice cream cone, is that we see all of this going on and then we finally pan out and see the big picture. And Jimmy is kind of in the middle of his own little world and his own little drama. And the second he got into that car, it opened everything up to that big picture and all the players.
Right. My main regret from our first podcast this season is the fact that I forgot to talk about the ants. So I just brought up the ice cream cone, and coolest thing to know about the ants, you know, behind the scene kind of thing, those were all actual ants. There wasn't a
Oh, that
CGI,
was really cool.
there wasn't a CGI tenant in there at all. There was actually an ants wrangler, handler who managed all that, which means apparently none of them got killed at all, which I find shocking. But that's.
Well, they built a set, special set for it, so they could like film that low and stuff too. So that's probably made it easier to keep the ants from getting smoked.
And what was really cool is that they had their own trailer. No, anyway. So.
Yes, the ice cream and the mess was just left there and looked at in disgust. Yes, it did remind me of that.
Anyway, back to the Kimmy conversation here. Because I just feel that what she's doing, it's really interesting because it feels like she, how do I put this without being too cliched about it? You know what? Sometimes the cliches are the right way to go. It seems to me that she's really at some sort of crossroads. And this isn't the first time, but it feels more pointed now. Or maybe she's just formed opinions. And I don't know if there's a certain level of self-sabotage going on here. I don't know if it's perhaps the influence of Jimmy is not helping matters any. But there's so much going on with her. And it feels like she's being her. It feels like she's pulling herself in different directions, and she's, you know, and her, and I think her ethics are getting a little bit compromised as well.
Yeah, this is going to be a strange comparison, but watching last week's and this week's episode and her arc and the way it's kind of, have you ever known, have you ever had friends that their relationship's kind of on the rocks because one of them's getting a little weird and a little antsy and kind of moving out of the relationship, and then the other one brings up like, hey, you know what could save this relationship is if we have a threesome. And whenever these two get together and start in on these like sort of shady shenanigans, it's sort of like they're bringing in somebody else into the relationship. And every time we've seen this, it's kind of the same thing, right? Like everything's really exciting for them, and oh, this is you, we watch them kind of bond on this different level, and then as soon as the shady kind of fades away, there is this really awkward silence that happens between the two of them, and I think we're seeing that pattern repeat itself.
Right. Like when they did their little con jobs together in previous seasons and things like that.
Yes, like it's
Yeah.
really exciting for both of them when it's happening, but as soon as it progresses into something bigger or it's done, they get very they lose who they are in the relationship.
Dan?
Well, I'm definitely noticing that there's more of like, she's being more deliberate in choosing to be this way instead of like, being persuaded by Jimmy. Well, okay, by Saul, whatever. We're still gonna call him
It's
Jimmy.
no, it's Jimmy. It's Jimmy.
So like the things she's doing now aren't things she can just like decide to like, get really crappy with him later. Well, at least, I mean, without being like completely unfair, because I mean, she's kind of, I mean, she's doing this stuff more on her own now, and it's kind of interesting to see that.
Oh yeah, unlike pretty much anything we've seen before, this has been her call. She's directing the action here. This has been this is This was her idea to go this way. You know what? I feel like it's almost, since we're covering both episodes, it's really impossible to keep it all about one. So let me get the intro for the other episode out of the way. The episode that was on this week was titled Dedicado a Max, and it was let me find my little thing. That one was written by Heather Marion, who she's penned three other Better Call Saul episodes that are notable for all having one-word titles, even though they were all in three different seasons: Click, Slip, and Talk. And it was directed by Jim McKay, who's also directed the episode Kushada. I think I pronounced it right, but if I didn't, I apologize. He's a really cool TV director. He's done some notable episodes of shows like Mr. Robot and Rectify, a lot of Good Wife episodes, and I'm a big fan of Good Wife, so you know. All right, only because I feel at this point it's impossible to talk about Kim and segregate it to that episode, because I feel that like there's so much that we're saying or we want to say, which is really about the second episode. So I'm just gonna say, if this is a two episode conversation, who cares what we're talking about? back to the point. The fact that unlike any other time, Jimmy is the one who kind of says, we should probably stop. We probably shouldn't do this. And one can say he's playing a game, but I wasn't getting that because that's not, he doesn't have the stake here that he normally does. This was her call. This was her call. He's not, he wasn't running. I didn't feel he was running a con on her to do that. She was the one who really pushed it to that extent. And then the scene that happens with her at the law firm is even more extreme with her and her boss.
Her and Kevin. Yeah, and can I tell you, like, at the beginning of this second episode, so this week, I was starting to get this idea of, like, oh, I kind of see where we're going to lose Kim, because that's always been a question. Like, we've been dreading. We're going to get the answer. Where does Kim go? And I started playing it out in my head that they're going to be on opposing sides of this same battle, and Jimmy's going to solve the situation and get out of control and do everything he can to beat Kim. But by the end of the episode, I was like, okay, so that's probably not where we're going. And maybe Kim's going to solve herself, if that makes sense.
I'm kind of worried she's going to get poisoned by fire ants from all the ice cream cones he's dropping all over the place. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, yes.
Well, the fact that she is all the way up until the end, I mean, the fact that she's someone who has been preaching about professional ethics and the way she was tortured just earlier this season when she did quote-unquote lie, well, not quote-unquote, she did. She lied to her client in order to convince him to take the deal, in, even though I believe Brian even said that the way she went about that, that is not an, if I'm recalling this correctly, if I'm wrong, I apologize, but I believe he said that's not an uncommon practice to do something along those lines, because sometimes you have to when you have a bullheaded client who can't see the forest for the trees, etc. But we saw how she tortured herself in the hallway and she was beating herself up and the way she spoke to Jimmy about it, etc. What she's doing now, yes, there isn't like an innocent party involved. You know, I wouldn't call Acker innocent, but you know, we're talking about Mesa Verde right now. It's a, you know, it's a corporation. But she's going beyond bending rules now. I mean, she's literally part of the other side. And so what you're saying, I guess it's almost the opposite of that, because she's clearly in on it. Her boss has picked up on it. He's the one guy with a freaking brain in his head, because now the people she works with don't seem to be picking up on it. But Rich, he's picked up on it. And the fact that she pushed it the way she did, and even in public like that, it was like, I mean, maybe she thought she was making a stronger case for herself. I don't think it convinced him anyway. He walked off. It probably didn't help her case any.
No.
I do feel the need to point out that the next episode is actually titled, I think it's Wexler v. Goodman. So it is their names as opposing counsel is the title of the next episode.
Well, and if you notice in the past few episodes, a thing that we see Kim have to deal with constantly is bullheaded clients that can't see their best option right in front of them. They don't listen to her. They want to do things their own way. She wants to be ethical. She doesn't know how to convince them what's in their own best interest. And then the flip side, we see Jimmy sitting in jail, you know, talking to his clients, and they're like, wait, 4,000's too much. And I mean, he does not sit there and try to convince them what's in their best interest. He'll dupe them straight up right there. Whatever it takes to make the sale.
Right.
And so he would be, it would be really hard to have somebody like him living in your life, able to always make this sale. And you're always hitting the same roadblocks. It would be almost impossible as a human being to not start picking up on those cues and operating the same way, because you can only take so much. And you can only have a good heart and all these ethics for so long before it might start driving you a little bit batty.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, like it's like a Star Wars thing, you know. I mean, just like you do the easy stuff, you know, you end up on the dark side. But like, just like imagine doing like the hard thing, watching somebody just like totally cruising through the training and stuff. You know, you're probably just kind of like, you know, let's get to a point where it's like, man, where the hell am I making putting myself through this crap? So she's convinced herself she's like, you know, maybe doing like the right thing here, sticking up for this stupid asshole, Hinchiff and Kai. But she's definitely just, you know, cutting corners and all that.
Right, which is really not her way. Dan, smack your mic or something. It sounds like my old talking through a can thing there for a second there. There you go. That nice. Now you sound like you. That was,
you sound like you're reporting the latest COVID-19 alerts or something there.
Anyway, I'm getting ready to take a picture of some human horse sex, so I can maybe be a good lawyer of my own and use that to attract clients.
I like the idea.
Fucking a horse.
I like the idea that you're actually telling us that you have to take a picture of it, like you don't already have such pictures, or just the memories.
There's so many horses in Wisconsin. I'm just balls deep in that shit all the time, man.
Well, by horses, I mean any four-legged creature, but okay.
Oh, this podcast really took a turn, guys.
Hey, we said it from the get-go. Our podcast name was STVD, and it was supposed to make you think of STDs. That was the joke from episode one. 240. Is this number 245? 245 podcasts ago.
Hey, you know, in pandemic times, you pull out all the stops.
That's right. Thanks, Corona. Anyway. People should take a shot every time we mention Corona. Anyway. Wow, now I got to remember where the hell we're going on all this. Okay, I mean, we can probably circle back to Kim over the course of the conversation because I don't want to leave everybody else out on it, but let me going back to that first episode again. I'm trying to remember. Oh, the Mike storyline. It's interesting with the Mike storyline because I know there may be some who may find, and some, I mean the less what's the word, sophisticated among us, who might find his storyline a bit stagnant. Because it's not being plot propelled the way we normally think Mike's storyline is. That's okay with me, because I like the idea that Mike's storyline doesn't have to be purely based on plot and, oh, we just need this to fit into the overarching, you know, history to get to where he is on Breaking Bad, which always feels more the case with Mike's character so far, maybe because it is tied to the cartel and Gus and everything for the last few seasons, as opposed to Jimmy, who has only touched that world very slightly so far. I thought what they've done with him, and by the way, and it doesn't work if you don't have an actor who's as compelling to watch, especially in silent mode, as Jonathan Banks has been in the character of Mike Ehrmantraut, specifically on this show, even more so than he was on Breaking Bad. It's been about character for me. It's been about there's a certain self-destructive nature to him that we haven't seen to this extent before. And yes, there is the question of when will he, like when Dan was talking about going to the dark side, he's put his toe in it. He hasn't fully committed to it because he's still tortured by what he's done. He's tortured by killing Werner from last season. He probably still doesn't have the satisfaction of comeuppance for unintentionally causing the death of that driver that the Salamancas ended up killing that he had when did the heist from that truck way back when. So he's got these things on his conscience that seem to be really wearing him down. And it's causing issues with his family. And so I've been really enjoying watching that. Again, it's more from just an acting perspective. Is it perfect? No, nothing is, but I've really liked it. I don't have I don't have I personally don't have any issues with it. I'm okay with it. I don't know how you guys feel. I mean, Dan, if you want to tackle this one first, that would be cool.
I would love to. Not because I'm a man, just because I have
That
something to say
that's
about that.
exactly that's actually exactly why I did.
But I think what they're doing here with Mike, and I think there's enough evidence to support it. But just like in season one, he was kind of having issues with the death of his son, just because he kind of felt like he enabled it by being part of that like corrupt Philadelphia like dirty cop system. But like now, I think he's definitely, it maybe took him a little bit of while, his daughter or his granddaughter talking about stuff to bring it through. But I think he kind of now he sees himself as like the guys that actually killed Maddie. Like that's who he feels he is now at this point after he killed Werner. So I think kind of like he just that must just be a really shitty place to be. I mean, because he clearly has a bunch of issues with that, but now that I'm pretty sure he feels that maybe he doesn't even like hasn't fully processed it and came to that, just kind of like has a feeling that that's like what he's become without really being able to understand it. But I kind of think that's what they're doing, and that's it's pretty interesting to me. I guess I've been saying interesting a lot.
No, but interesting is a fine word too. Like I was gonna say, it's interesting how your audio went really well and all of a sudden it became really small, but still could hear you clearly, so don't worry about it. Totally agree with what you were saying.
Can I add something?
Absolutely, please do.
Okay,
No,
fantastic.
no.
No, you may not. Okay, a woman's talking now. Dan, hold my purse. Okay, so something that I really love that we are seeing in the past few episodes is with Mike, something we never got in Breaking Bad, and up until now, we've never seen. We've heard him talk about his son, but we've never actually seen what he was probably like as a dad. We see how he is as a grandfather, but to me, how he is with his granddaughter is always the grandpa that has regrets and is making amends. When he snaps and he hollers at his granddaughter for whatever, like to me, it was like, there he is. That's who he was as a father. And I maybe not quite for the same reasons, but we've always seen him just play it cool. He's always very calm. He's the calm voice in the storm. But you know that, there's more to him than that. We've always heard his backstory, but we never actually seen who he was before he became the Mike we know. And I think that was a little window of who he really was.
That's interesting. I guess in a way, I always kind of thought at a certain point in the late in his later days on Breaking Bad that his relationship with Jesse had a certain there was a sort of a surrogate father thing there as well. But maybe
Oh yeah.
so because I always thought with Jesse it was like the war it was like the two fathers, between
Right.
Walt and Mike for him. Neither one really being the best role model,
But even in his relationship with Jesse, I always got the feeling that it was making amends. These are the things that I should have done for my son. This is the advice I should have given my son. And it's that amend relationship that I think we're seeing again. And honestly, the only times we've ever really seen Mike slip in his steadiness, and not even just his, not necessarily steadiness, I guess, but it's just Mike slip on his knowing what the hell's happening at every second and knowing what to do next, was when he's yelling at his granddaughter. And then again, when he's talking to Stacy, and she's like, "Listen, Pop, you need, come by next week." And he's losing his cool because he's losing his. It's showing that he knows he's slipping. Is that whole scenario? And then, of course, at the end of Breaking Bad, when he, when he makes that Freudian slip. But
Perfect.
I really do think that this is who Mike is, and that's who he was as a dad. And everything we've seen is this constant sense of control. But that's, again, it's making up for where he went wrong.
Well, it's interesting with Mike, and kind of going along with what you're saying, is he's a character that for the most part on both shows, it's always been very much about him being in control.
Yes.
He comes in. He's a fixer. He's a clo you know. He's a cleaner, and he fixes things. He's the guy who's in control. So when things are out of his control, that's when you start to see things get frayed for him, when he starts to lose his temper or whatever. We saw that in the later stages of Breaking Bad, when because Walt, in his mind, was a loose cannon and creating situations that he hadn't anticipated. You know, most largely the fact that Walt is the one who ends up killing off Gus Fring, really sets everything in motion to leading to Mike's demise, you know, midway through the fifth season. We've also seen it in I couldn't tell what you said. I heard "ain't too pretty." That's all I could make out there.
No, I just said I'm the same way. We're like, I don't take that kind of thing well when things get out of control like that.
Oh, well, I mean, it's a class. I mean, quite frankly, it's a classic character flaw. I mean, when you're it's screenwriting 101, be it for TV or film, you know, what a character most wants to have is control, and when he or she is loses control or isn't in control, that's the shortcoming. That's the tragedy. That's what brings the character down. That's the obstacle that he or she has to fight.
That's what I tell my kids all the time. I'm the funnest mom in the world as long as you do everything exactly the way I want you to.
What I was circling back to back on Better Call Saul is that we've only seen it a few times with Mike on this show. I mean, obviously what's going on right now is the biggest manifestation of it. I mean, this is huge. But we might recall, like, well, remember, like, when he lost his temper during the therapy sessions, the group therapy thing. And if he had been more thinking more rationally about, you know, you're there with your daughter-in-law and the whole thing, like, and also a woman that you're actually in the midst of building a potential relationship with, and he pretty much demolishes one and has to resuscitate the other as far as relationships are concerned, because he just couldn't stand the way this one guy was talking and believing him to be a liar or whatever. He couldn't let that go. He couldn't address it after the fact. He had it, which, because he wanted to be in control of the situation, you know, what he's doing now, again, fast forwarding to this week's episode, the Dedicado a Max, is it a Max, whatever. Did the I mean, I kind of enjoyed his little respite in Mexico, because it mainly because it just had some nice little moments in there. Did I love it? No, I don't think I loved it, but I liked it. I liked it fine. I love the moment where he's trying to build his own little cell phone charger, and the woman just comes in with a cell phone charger. I thought, wow, he's super MacGyver now, and he fucking does that. I got a kick out of that. But the thing I wanted to say in relation to Mike, and then this helps broaden out to the rest of to several other characters. And speaking about being in control, or more characters who are normally very controlled, starting to lose it a little bit. I think there's a little bit of a theme going on here. Oddly enough, not with Jimmy, however. Jimmy almost seems to be asserting more control in his life by taking on the Saul Goodman persona and so on. Kim's got that going on now because of the conflicts we were talking about. And for the one of the only times we see Gus Fring that way, when Gus Fring is back to the first episode, when he's waiting to find out what's going to happen with Hank and Gomi, whether they'll take the bait. I think it's like $750,000 or something, some big money drop, whatever. Pick up the guy, blah 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 blah, whatever. Gus Fring is not Mr. Cool for one of the very few times that we've seen him there. He's kind of, you know, he's on edge, and we don't normally see him on edge in that manner. And of course, the poor sap West who he takes it out on, although at least he didn't have a box cutter on him or anything, was that the kid Lyle at the at Los Pollos Hermanos. Probably this is probably the way Dan likes to torture his employees there, I'm sure. by having them scrub the fryer over and over and over, and it's still not being good enough. And then he does his own thing. He's doing that because a lot of it's also his way of asserting control. And that's something he can control, whereas he can't control what's going on with the DEA and whether this whole little scheme of theirs will actually work out. So I thought that was just an interesting kind of like mirroring of characters who are kind of the whole, you know, things are a little, have gotten a little beyond their control, and we're not used to seeing them that way.
Yeah. I like how he's sitting there and he's waiting for both aspects of his life to get cleaned up.
Dan?
I took that scene a second way, too. I kind of thought that he was keeping Lyle there so he'd have kind of an alibi for himself if the thing went shitty. So I didn't think he was just tormenting Lyle because he was having a bad day. I think that was a part of it. But I also think he was, like, deliberately keeping him there just, you know, as his, you know, cover, keep his cover story more intact.
Not sure what he would need an alibi for if the, for a money drop somewhere else. So I don't know. I mean, obviously it's just an opinion, but I just don't see him doing that because but you know, whatever, it could be. That's interesting.
Poor dude was stuck there cleaning that fryer because Deshaun couldn't do his goddamn job.
Well, yeah.
And clean it before he left. And that's it. So here we got Gus just sitting here with both ends of his business trying to get clean. He's just trying to do his shit. Poor drug dealers, kingpins. It's a tough life.
That was a clean fryer. There was nothing more had to be done. There was no issues.
That's what, at old time, I'm like, that's a pretty, I've seen way worse. That's pretty good.
He was basically like Walt freaking out about, you know, dirt in the fucking meth lab or something. The only thing missing was a fly at that point.
The fly. It was his fly.
Ants, flies. Ah, bugs. So sticking with Gus for a moment, then circling back to Mike. And then bouncing to the second episode again. So Gus does finally show up, and anyone who watches the show and has a decent memory knows that that fountain is dedicated to his, let's just say, partner from years ago who was killed by Hector or whatever. But this, you realize this whole thing has been about him trying to convince Mike to once again work for him, to be officially on his payroll, so to speak. Because it's been amazing watching Mike kind of be defiant to Gus Fring, whereas we never ever saw anything remotely like that on Breaking Bad. So he, you know, doesn't know quite who he's dealing with, or doesn't care quite who he's dealing with at this point. Do we think that this is the final temptation here? At this point, he's on board with him? And if so, do we believe that just by appealing to the sense of quote-unquote revenge is really... That's the straw that kind of makes Mike kind of want to join up? I'm kind of iffy on that. I don't know how... Yeah. I'm like...
I'm torn. I don't know if that's enough.
The revenge angle is somewhat effective, just because, I mean, you know, Mike also like took some revenge on those guys and took his son out. So maybe it's a little thin, but I guess I could see it somewhat.
I feel revenge works as a motivation for a mission, but not necessarily a
not for loyalty.
Maybe there just needs to be something more. I don't know. I trust these writers because I'm thinking, okay, we're midway through the season. There's probably a whole lot more that has to happen. I feel like some. Yeah,
do you think something will come in with like Kaylee or something? Because I mean, that's his biggest motivator thus far. Has always been his granddaughter. So
I'm going to assume that it could actually. I was going to say no, but now I'm thinking about it. It is conceivable because Lalo, you know, seems to be able to have eyes everywhere and check things out. And there's no reason to not to suspect that he will eventually find out about that family. Even though I think they move somewhere further away, that doesn't really mean anything. I mean, eventually Mike's going to get followed, and they're going to see this daughter-in-law and granddaughter somewhere. So that it could be something like that. I could see that. I could see that.
The Solomon twins already had eyes on his granddaughter once. I mean, back in season two or whatever. So there's kind of a history there.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely within it's within Gus's wheelhouse. I mean, wouldn't be afraid to use that.
There's a big dot for Lalo to connect there, isn't there? Because, you know, they've had dealings with Mike before, and now Lalo knows Mike. So maybe, you know, that's a pretty big, you know, connection that Lalo has the ability to make now, if they can, you know, figure out that Mike played like a role in, you know, getting Tuco put in jail way back in the day, and
right.
All that other actor. So
yeah, I the more I think about it, the more I think that has a certain level of plausibility that just the revenge motive by itself didn't. It would be interesting to see if it manifests purely by Lalo and the Salamanca's side themselves, or if Gus Fring, because I wouldn't put it past him,
just like
Walter White would, you know, or quite frankly Jimmy or Saul or whomever would, kind of use that and create a situation that appears that way. You know, kind of guide. You know what I mean? Kind of guides the situation for that to manifest, to convince Mike. You know, kind of doing kind of a puppeteer kind of a situation. I can very much see that happening. Actually,
that's the implication.
Yeah. We do have to see a little bit more, though, because I mean, I think at the end of the episode, Mike is still a little skeptical about it. They just kind of planted the seed, and I do think we'll see more as it gets completed.
Yeah, I agree, but I also think if they go that route, by having unbeknownst to Mike, Gus kind of guiding that to happen, what I think will be interesting about it is, number one, it'll remind us just how bad, evil a person Gus is, and also kind of have that eerie parallel to who our protagonist, who becomes our antagonist, years later in Breaking Bad, because that's exactly the kind of shit that Walter White would have done and did, you know, quite frankly, like with the kid, with Jesse and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
He would create a situation that was just, you know, it would be interesting to see if they, although one might say, really, writers, you're going to go back to that? Well, go back to that. Well, it's fine. You're doing it differently. It's not like poisons involved. So that would be kind of interesting. I'm still hopeful that we will get, let's see, it's episode 5, I believe, the last one. All right, so we still have another 5 episodes of this season, and then we have an extra order for the final season. I'm still hopeful we'll get a very Gus Fring-centric episode. I just feel there needs to be more done with him. I just feel we've gotten a lot with every character but him, and I don't know if we've really learned anything all that new about Gus Fring compared to these other characters. I keep thinking they're going to do something more with him. So I'm still holding out hope that they will do something like that.
Maybe. I hope so.
Because outside of those couple, you know, those flashbacks, which we remember more from Breaking Bad, and it was really, you know, what happened, you know, was Hector killing Max and something, we haven't really seen much of his backstory. We don't really know much about him, you know. I mean, like if someone asked me right now, it's like, okay, is he married or not? It's like, no, wait, I don't think so. No, he's not, because we always see him alone at home. But that seems odd. I don't know. Stuff like that. So I hope we do get more on him. Let's see, where else can... Okay, so I feel that we've kind of covered Mike for both episodes. I feel like we're done with you, Mike. Done with you, Gus. All right, I got to touch on the fun part, one of the most fun parts of these two episodes. The constant schemes with Jimmy and Acker were making me laugh, because it just became so cartoonish It was lovely. I mean, and the fact I was so proud of myself that, I don't pick up on things all that quickly sometimes. I figured out what he was doing with the smoke detectors when he was doing it. I was like, oh, it's the batteries. It's the batteries. It's going to be like the radioactive, the battery. I knew. I was like, oh, I actually called one myself. But I'm really enjoying. I actually also even like the fact that Acker himself seems to be kind of enjoying it. He's like, he's kind of having a weird kind of delight with it. But everything, the ridiculous nature, like, oh, here's, ancient pottery that they may or may not have found. Here's some, it's radioactive. It's this. Oh, look, Jimmy's changed the address again. Where's he gotten that idea at Mesa Verde before? I just thought it was hysterical.
Yeah, it was fun.
Oh, did Dan?
Yeah, I was laughing out loud too, which doesn't happen super often when I'm watching these kind of shows. So it was very, very nicely done. And I kept having like the same camera movement when they're just like, random paralegal telling like Kim, like, hey, guess what? No crap's happening now. It was kind of funny.
And she's like, you gotta be kidding me.
Also, I don't know if how many people picked up on this because I actually recognized him. I can't believe it. I actually recognized him physically before I heard his before recognizing his voice. The dude who was the main, what do you call him? Contractor, leading the construction crew. That's John DiMaggio. He's the guy he's probably best known for just doing 1,000 cartoon voices over the last 25, 30 years. I guess probably people know him as like Bender on Futurama, but he's done a million voices on all the cartoons I've watched over the years. Everything from Tiny Toons and Pinky and the Brain to Batman and Superman. He's done countless voices on all of them. He's a voice actor.
Nice.
So to see him, I was like, oh. And the only reason, because I've seen panels like on YouTube of when they get like together like a bunch of cartoon voices to like, we're gonna do what if Pinky and the Brain did Star Wars or Citizen Kane or something like that or Lord of the Rings, and they all have them all doing the different voices together. So that's how I was like, oh my God, is that John DiMaggio? And then I was like, wait a minute, should I have been paying attention to the opening credits? So then I looked it up and saw it. It's almost fascinating. Other than my mentioning really briefly, it was kind of funny that we kind of, maybe because we were so giddy from the first episode, barely mentioned the fact that we got the second episode with Hank and Gomez in it. So that was kind of
Yeah,
interesting.
I had a fun moment with that, with the two of them when they were talking. They were talking about the dead drop, and they're saying that how does it go? Molina's info checked out so far. As long as we don't spook the target, he'll round third and we'll run straight for home. Which made me laugh really hard because my Molina is Yadier Molina from the Cardinals, and if you've ever seen him run, it's like watching a rhinoceros boulder. Like his run is so slow. I mean, he's an amazing ball player, but when he runs, it's like you're like, pick it up, pick it up, pick it up. So that whole, I don't know, I made me laugh out loud. I
You
don't know.
said
I thought it
you
was
should you should you should have seen his brother Benji Molina run, because
Yes.
I've seen Yadier Molina, and again, we're talking about all-time great catcher for the last 15, 18 years,
Yeah.
whatever it's been. Benji Molina, who obviously did not have as long a career, also, but solid behind the plate. But if his brother's built kind of like a tank, Benji was built more like a mailbox, and about as fast moving as one. So he was just, I remember, I just, because he was on the Yankees for a few years there. He was like kind of like their backup catcher, and he pretty much defined plotting when he would go around the bases. And I was like, oh, I feel so bad
Yeah,
for
they have some amazing ball players, but definitely flat foot runners in that family.
That's well. That's well. They're catchers. They're generally speaking, catcher. It's amazing when a
So
catcher can run even
there's
half.
big thighs of steel. It makes it hard for running. They're not spring loaded.
Hey, after. Every time my team's catcher runs for first, he pulls his groin. So, maybe they shouldn't be running. I don't know. I think he's pulled his groin like 17 times at this point. No, that doesn't matter now, because who knows if they'll ever be baseball again. Thanks, Corona. So,
And then the quip that I heard, that it made me think of Dan, when he told Gomi, when he said, nice, the whole Ansel Adams burn, you know, when he's talking about waiting for a shot. Crack me up.
I never Dan thought, because I was just remembering the place where I used to work. We actually represented Ansel Adams. I was like, oh, look, Ansel Adams, shout out, woohoo! Good. I forgot about our Dan-cel Adams.
Dan-cel Adams, yeah.
I hate myself.
and then the spelunk. The spelunk part. I don't know. That was probably my favorite scene out of the last two episodes. I don't know. I find myself, when I first watched Breaking Bad, Hank just kind of annoyed me at first, but then as his character developed, I started to like him. And then upon my last Breaking Bad rewatch, I told this to Dan. I was like, God, I cannot just stop feeling so bad for this guy, because I know what's coming. And he's been right there this whole time. So now when I see him in this, I'm just like, I'm rooting for him, and I still know what the end's going to be, but I like him so much more than I ever would have thought I was going to grow any fondness for him whatsoever, even with his really obnoxious sense of humor. And I feel for him every time. Hey, I see him, I'm like, oh, he's just doing the best he can do.
Hey, I've said before, I mean, although I could pick any character and probably do this with him or her, almost any character, Hank in many ways might have the most interesting and varied story arc throughout Breaking Bad. I can make the case his arc is more interesting than Walter White's or Jesse's. I'm not going to, but I could. One other... A couple of things we didn't mention about the more recent episode, this week's episode, got to see some characters returning. One that we have seen on the show already, and we've also seen him, but originally from Breaking Bad. We saw Doc Goodman again. I still don't understand how his name is Goodman, because he's not, you know, whatever, but okay. But more oddly enough, the dude that we saw way back in the first season, I believe it was a Pimento episode.
Mr. X.
They called himself Mr. X in this episode. He was not Mr. X back in the season. Because I think I'd remember if he called himself Mr. X. That's the guy that Mike takes the gun from and like knocks him out or something. Did not expect to see him again, though. I guess I should have. I loved.
I was really disappointed, but actually, I would have been funny. It was going to be Bill Burr walking off the headline there.
Oh,
I didn't mind this guy. It was a cool callback, but I really thought it was going to be Bill Burr.
I will tell you, and again, smack your microphone. I don't know what's going on over there. I was so sure that was going to be Bill Burr. And I was like proud of myself for not having found out about that ahead of time. And I kept thinking of you, because I was like, oh, Dan's going to be so thrilled, Bill Burr. And then it was him. I was like, oh, okay, this guy. And then, like, you know, about like 2 minutes into it, I was like, oh, he's funny. Okay, I'll go along with this. But Bill Burr, he's got to show up. He's got to show up again. It's insane if he doesn't. The whole conversation is when they're in, you know, Jimmy's office, and the guy gets offended. That was, to me, I thought the comical stuff was just going to be the scheming. That was just straight out comedy. I really enjoyed that quite a bit, especially when they realized no, you know, we could rent a van, we just put a hood over his head and take, you know, no. I really love that part a lot. Okay. Is there anything y'all want to say about either one of these two episodes or anything else we haven't mentioned about this show or anything else in the world about this show?
Yeah, last week's episode when he's having lunch with Howard.
Excellent. We didn't even touch the Howard stuff. Can't believe we didn't get to that. Interesting scene. What do you think of Howard in that scene? And in the scene that when we saw him again this week, but mostly that lunch scene, I would say, more than anything else. Did they have a conference room scene as well? Or was that in an earlier episode? Can't remember. Anyway, the Howard
scene. I have this feeling, I don't know, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but it seems like to me that Howard's the guy that just desperately wants to be part of that family. The way he was with Jimmy's brother. Now he's saying, hey, I have my regrets. But he's in his own way, kind of stood up for Jimmy, and Jimmy just hates him for it, you know? But it's like, he's always trying to get close to, you know, whether it be him or his brother. It's like there's just something there where he's just like, he wants to be a part of this family or something. It's just, it's very strange. And not necessarily in a negative way, but I think that's why Jimmy has such a problem with him, because he sees it and he's like, he's the guy that Chuck wanted him to be, you know, and it was just pisses him off because he's the guy that does everything right.
That's an interesting take. I would have thought of it that way. Dan?
Yeah, I kind of think he's mad at Howard, you know, now just because, I don't know, I mean, just Howard's like, you know, off, you know, making it harder for him to, like, justify, like, you know, being Saul. I mean, you know, it's like Howard's trying to, like, you know, just, you know, so, like, while Mike's trying to, like, stop himself from being a bad guy, like, Jimmy's, like, trying to, like, stop himself from being a good guy. So, like, all these, like, to, like, you know, not go be, like, Mr. Skeevy. And Howard's really doubling down on that lately. So I think it's kind of, that's what they're doing there.
That's interesting. Okay. I think my feeling with Howard is, I mean, we've already seen, that's another character that we got. Howard, to me, it's funny how you were talking about Hank before. Howard, to me, in some ways, is like the Hank of the series.
Yeah, I could see it. I know where, exactly where you're going with this.
Right, because if you go back to Breaking Bad, you know, five plus seasons, you know, that first season of Hank, we only thought of him one way. He was just a shade over one dimensional, entertaining, but pretty much. And then we got to see all these other shadings and emotions and sides to the character as we went through later seasons. We've kind of gotten that with Howard, because when we were introduced to Howard in that first season, it was almost a cliche. You know, he was like, oh, he's the uptight corporate lawyer that hates Jimmy and everything he stands for, and Jimmy doesn't like him, blah, blah, blah. And then we got to learn more about him, and more, and more. And especially when we found out he was actually just the button man for Chuck. Chuck was the one who didn't want Jimmy to be part of the business, to even be a lawyer at all, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe I'm just going very surface here, and I'm not really delving too deeply here. Obviously, we saw Howard take a tailspin for a time there because he was overcome with the guilt of Chuck's death, which Jimmy certainly helped, you know, stoke that fire with the way he treated him and what he said to him, you know, when all that went down, if you guys recall that. And Jimmy, you know, not to his credit, and this is kind of shows one of those not such nice sides to his character, kind of took a little bit of perverse pleasure in that, because he kind of looked at Howard as just an extension of his brother, preventing him from doing what he wanted, you know, and looking down on him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So now that Howard's kind of bounced back and they're actually doing well, and he's, you know, he's back to looking, you know, prim and proper and not disheveled and then top of his game. Well, first of all, that's not going to thrill Jimmy anyway, because, again, I think, whether he'll admit it or not, he was taking, you know, a great deal of satisfaction in the fact that, you know, Howard had been not just been taken down a peg, but he was kind of, you know, spiraling out of control. Howard's now back in control. Hey, control, there's that word again. And the fact that this is something that if Howard had presented this to Jimmy, and it's one of those things they have to try to remember how much time has passed on the series. I always get a little confused by that. Well, they had he had to be out, he had to not have his license for a while, so I guess it's been more than a year already. So let's just say if he had presented this to Jimmy, say, a year plus ago, i.e. when Chuck was still alive, I think Jimmy jumps at it. I think Jimmy has already chosen it. Unlike these characters who are at crossroads and trying to decide where they're going, like Mike, like Kim, whatever, Jimmy has pretty much chosen his path already. You know, he's already well down it. And the fact that someone's going to present him with another route after he's already chosen his road is like, no, screw you. I'm already. Where were you when I needed you? And the fact that he chooses to lash out at him and does it in an anonymous fashion, i.e., the bowling balls through his car, it's funny, but it's again, it kind of reminds us. Jimmy's kind of a shitty guy sometimes, you know, because as we see, you know, later on the next episode, it never even occurs to Howard. It doesn't appear to occur to Howard at all that Jimmy was behind that. He still asks him, are you considering the offer? You know, I want to talk, but he's still trying to woo him to work for him, you know, which kind of just makes him, it kind of made me a little sad, actually. It's like, no, if he had gone down this path. Now, we've already seen, as Jimmy himself has mentioned, he, at this point, he's probably not meant for, you know, the corporate law firm life, you know, considering what happened with Davis and Mann, whatever, Maine, Davis and Maine. But I think Jimmy's just getting pissed off by it. And it's like, no, that's not the life he wants. And the fact that this guy keeps, you know, dangling it in front of him, you know, I think it's pissing him off more than it's, you know, kind of enticing him. It's an interesting storyline that I wasn't expecting. And I don't know if they're doing it just to, you know, to make sure we get the, I forget the, Dan will remind me the actor's Patrick name. Fabian. Yes, Patrick Fabian. Just basically to give us a reason to keep him on the show. But I've kind of enjoyed that. But I think that's as far as I've taken it, which I know that's not exactly deep digging there. But that's just the way I've been seeing it.
Well, Jimmy is always, when we hear stories, you know, when we used to hear stories from Chuck when Jimmy was a kid in his dad's shop, for instance, it seems like he's always been in a personal battle between who he is and what the world expects him to be. And he finally fully accepted who he was and doesn't feel an ounce bad for it. His brother's gone. His brother cannot remind him anymore of what everyone else thinks he should be. And that's kind of what Howard's doing, is saying, hey, you're better than this. And I mean, he's not using those words, but it's probably running through Jimmy's head that the same kind of thing, like you should have a certain bit of expectation. You have the smarts, you have the skill. This is what you should be doing. You should be doing things this way.
Well,
and he finally got freedom from those expectations.
Right. See, I agree partially with that, but I don't think that Howard's trying to convert.
Intentional.
I don't think he's trying to convert the way he is.
No,
but what
no.
I think.
But I think Howard sees him that way, and that pisses not Jimmy, but it pisses Saul off, because he's like a, you know, the body snatcher thing. You know, Saul's taken over now. Like Jimmy's gone, and we've got who we really are truly meant to be, and it's just a reminder of
right.
Somebody thinks I should be something else.
So I think my level of disagreement probably just went up a little bit then, because in my mind, and as far as I think the show is concerned, he's still very much Jimmy. I wouldn't call him Saul just yet. Where I differ is, I thought maybe this is where you were going, and maybe it still might be kind of tied into what you were saying. So it's there. And I would trace it back to his brother as well, in a sense. The way Howard speaks to him, there's a certain, and I think the way it's registering on Jimmy, there's something very patronizing about it. There's something very, you know, it's something. It's almost like a pat on the head. He's still calling him like, you know, the Charlie Hustle kind of comment. I mean, it's kind of way you refer to, like, you know, a first year kind of a thing. You know, meanwhile, dude's been a lawyer for a while now. He's not some, like, you know, guy who was like a paralegal just 2 years ago kind of thing. I think he's taking it to, like, there's something somewhat demeaning about it. And the interesting thing with Jimmy or Saul, but we're talking Jimmy now, is no matter how outrageous he gets, no matter how unethical his behavior might be, there's always going to be something for every human. There's a certain thing, you know, it's about dignity and it's about, you know, respect, very much about respect for Jimmy. And he feels like he wasn't respected by them before. And I feel just the way he's being spoken to, I still think he perceives that. It's kind of like, oh no, we see you're a real go-getter. You know, he's still got that fire. It's like, yeah, you're talking to him like you're a little schmuck. You know?
Scrappy go-getter.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, it's not like he just got his, you know, degree, you know, 6 months ago. He's been doing this for a while. Yes, he was out of commission for a year, but still, I just think he just didn't take to it well. I just, the way he was being spoken to.
Definitely think he didn't. I think if you took half of what you are coming from and half of where I'm coming from, we've pretty much pegged Howard.
Yep. Da, da, da,
da, da, da, da. Dan, do you want to come in and mess this whole soup up?
No.
Which is,
I concur with that. I don't have any. Yeah, it all makes sense to me.
Wait, is that Dan or is that Stephen Hawking? I wasn't sure. I can't. because you can't hear yourself. All right, says your mic quality just got really, really tiny. There was something. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. There was something else that happened in one of these episodes that I wanted to talk about. Just give me a second just to see if there's something I'm missing on my notes here. Pain, Gomi, Fring, Weak, what else? Da 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 da. Okay, Jimmy, Scheme, Recuperating, Goodman. Nope. Didn't. I guess I'm wrong. Oh well, look at that. We covered it all really fast. Now we can talk about the outside. No, I'm just kidding. So, I mean, for me personally, I've enjoyed these episodes because they very much feel to me like mid-season episodes. So they're doing what they should, and I love the. Do I know where this is going to go by season's end? No, because they do kind of switch it up on us with the show occasionally. Like, we always remember that season with the Chuck season when they had the big episode, you know, on the stand or whatever, in the middle of the season instead of that being like a final episode kind of a thing. So I've already seen the titles for one episode, which is the next one, which is, like I said, it's Wexler v. Goodman. But I'm just kind of curious to see where stuff starts to shake out. And I don't really mean as far as Kim and Mesa Verde, because I'm assuming that whole corporate relationship is going to implode in one of these episodes, because it simply has to. They can't be that stupid. But I'm just wondering about her own career, whether she's put her, how much she's put herself at risk, because she may be back to practicing on her own pretty soon, the way she's going. So that to me is the biggest that's going on right now on the show.
Yes.
And all right, so is there anything else you guys want to bring up before I start to wrap this up?
No. Nope, I think we got it covered. I'm just waiting to see Kim's perfectly curled ponytail to look frazzled one time.
by the way, I love one thing that deserved to be mentioned. Jimmy, or let's just say Odenkirk's impression of Kim Wexler, spot on, yes. Spot freaking on.
Notice that later on when she is talking, you know, when her and Jimmy are role playing, you know, and he's being Kim, he does like a hand gesture, and then like later on when she's talking, she does that same hand gesture.
I had to believe that. I kept thinking, I saw that. I said, that's got to be deliberate. There's no, that cannot be a coincidence. It's got to be. The director had to say, I'll do this like he did, or vice versa. But however, because I don't know if they shot, those were shot in order or not. But yeah, that was, I want to see bloopers from that scene. Because she had a crack up after that, you know, between the voice that she was doing, which sounded nothing like that guy, and he was, you know, already, you know, Odenkirk's talented at this. He's, anyone who's watched Mr. Show or even the Ben Stiller Show way back in the day knows that Odenkirk can do this kind of stuff. But that was just hysterical. I don't know if there's anything else TV wise. If I had finished The Plot Against America, the first episode, I would have talked about that. I've only watched the first 20 minutes. It's very good so far, but I can't really critique 20 minutes. but it seems really, I mean, the guys from The Wire are behind it, and, you know, it's Jews in the 1940s being persecuted by everybody. I can relate.
I take a more proactive angle, and I've been watching Hunters.
I need to start watching it. I haven't yet. It's on my list. The only other TV thing I would like, I had this thought a week ago because I haven't even watched the new one yet. I don't know why I haven't watched. I was waiting for someone else, and I guess now with the quarantines and the social distancing, we're not going to get together to watch it. I'm watching on my own. I feel like Curb Your Enthusiasm heard my list of my top, whatever it was, how many did I do? 12, 16, 13, I don't remember. My top comedies from last year. And somebody said, Larry said, hold my latte or something. Because Curb Your Enthusiasm is killing it like never before this season. And Dan, I don't know if you really watch it at all. It's okay if you don't. They had an episode like a week or two ago with Jon Hamm was on the entire episode. And It'll make you love Jon Hamm all over again. He was just so damn, and he kept being referred to as Jon Hamm by everybody. Everyone kept referring to him by his full name. Over, it's like, what are you doing in my house, Jon Hamm? you too, Jon Hamm. Get out. It just kept over, you know. And he basically becomes like a Larry clone by the end of the episode. It's just the fact they got Jon Hamm to go pretty. It's been so good. Just had to say that.
Maybe I'll have to check it out once I finish season 3 of Cheers.
Oh, God. For like the third time this year.
See, I can't watch a show like Cheers because it'll make me sad because all the bars are closed now. Anyway.
In your own bar, in your living room, everybody there knows your name.
Yeah, the stupid cat. Anyway.
Leave dude out of this.
Well, now that he's named, should I rename him the Walking Dude because of the whole disease thing going on now? Anyway, all right. So if somehow you enjoyed this podcast, how couldn't you? Between my stupid jokes and blathering on and trying to make out what Dan's saying through his hieroglyphic-like microphone. I mean, like I said, Jamie, it's all on you. You either made or broke this podcast this week. But if you enjoyed the podcast, regardless of all that.
Sorry. We can't. Next week, hopefully, Dan will stop using Mike's cell phone in a tunnel.
It drives me crazy. Did you say sorry or did you say SARS? Anyway.
It's all the same. It's all the same in pandemic times.
I know. Anthrax a lot. Anyway, so if you enjoyed this podcast, you'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like Better Call Saul. I started to say Breaking Bad first. That's really bad. And it's breaking. No, Better Call Saul and so many other shows that are both good and bad. What else? You can follow us, subscribe to us, in fact, on the iTunes. Find us there at Serious TV Drama Podcast. Subscribe to the feed as well as rate and review us. You can follow us on Twitter when I get around to tweeting our stuff, which is almost never. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast, STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. Just Google those words and you'll find us a bunch of other places. listen to us on YouTube. One day we'll shock you. We'll do a video cast. It'll never happen. Actually, I can do it in a minute. Oh, we should do it next week. I'll wear my Walter White gas mask all the time, so I don't have to be embarrassed by the way I look. That would be awesome. We could do a Corona cast. Oh yeah, we have an email address. I don't think anyone's emailing us. I keep forgetting the password to check it out. But if you want to email us, and maybe I'll find it like months later, like a buried treasure. Our email address apparently is at it's stvdpodcast@gmail.com. We actually have an email address for things other than porn membership sites and stuff.
Hey, somebody's locked in their house. It's time to email us. We gotta check the email. Who knows what it could bring?
Yeah, never know. I wish we were smart enough to post threads on Facebook ahead of time and we could like read comments, but it would end up being like, you know, Cameron going, I didn't like this episode very much, and Dennis not understanding something and Scott just going, yay, I don't know. All right. So.
Listen, Scott with one T, I'm really disappointed in you. I set you up with that whole email thing. There was like 50 virus jokes just sitting there for you.
That's 12:47 in the morning. Leave me alone. You know what? Usually we're only halfway through with our podcast at this point, so that's actually a good thing. Anyway, I don't know. We might be back next week with a one episode podcast. We might be back in a couple weeks with a couple episodes. I don't know. In this day and age and what's going on out there, who the hell knows anymore? As long as they're not turning off our TVs, I guess we're relatively safe. You'd think we would do more podcasting as a result? Isn't Ozark supposed to be coming back soon, Dan?
Week from Friday, yeah.
All right, so maybe if this... this whole social distancing thing continues. Maybe we'll have more time to binge that and do a podcast about that. So
I can give you updates from the Ozarks.
That's true. Oh, God help us. All right. wait, what was on Sunday? Westworld. Oh, okay. I know Dan doesn't want to hear about Westworld. So. It was nice to see Aaron Paul again, so. Wasn't a bad episode. Shh. All right. So, on that, I will start the round of good nights. Good night, Dan. Thank you, Jamie, for hopping aboard. And good night to you. And good night to everyone out there. Be well and be safe.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.